This program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Welcome. I'm Deborah Love for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues, bringing you information from respected sources about health matters that may be helpful for you or for those you care about, as always in consultation with your healthcare provider. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from a variety of sources. As always, I'll name them as we go along. The first three articles are kind of similarly related. They're connected. The first is about weaning off GLP-1 drugs. Next, I'll talk about early signs of diabetes, and then some information about artificial sweeteners that I'll put in the Mythbusters category. So let's start. This first one is from the Harvard Health Letter, and it says, weaning off GLP-1, tips for the transition. Learning what happens when you stop taking a GLP-1 weight loss drug and how to sustain results. After a year of using a GLP-1 medication to lose weight, Abby was ecstatic to have shed more than 100 pounds, but she grew uneasy as she approached her target, wondering what happens when you stop a GLP-1 drug and how she could maintain her stellar results. Research suggests Abby's concern about rebound weight gain is well-founded. People who cease taking GLP-1 obesity drugs, which include semaglutide, known as Wegovy, and tirzepatide, known as Zepbound, typically regain an average of nearly a pound a month, ultimately gaining back all the weight they lost within 2 years, according to a review of 37 earlier studies. The study's findings, published online January 7, 2026 by BMJ, don't surprise Megan Salomon, a dietitian at the Weight Center at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. This is a medication that controls a disease like any other. If someone has high blood pressure and takes medication to control it, their blood pressure would go back up if they were to come off that medication, Salomon explains. GLP-1s act in the same fashion. Someone stopping these medications doesn't have the same control over their obesity, and their weight can increase. So what to expect? Nearly 12% of Americans, about 1 in 8, have used GLP-1 drugs for weight loss, according to a 2025 report from RAND, a nonprofit research organization. People who tap these blockbuster medications, which mimic a naturally produced hormone called GLP-1, lose an average of 15 to 20% of their body weight. Even when people want to lose more weight, they may have strong reasons to discontinue use of GLP-1. Intolerable side effects such as persistent nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, or fatigue top the list of common reasons why people may stop, Salomon says. But cost and access are also major issues. When coming off a GLP-1, watch for increased hunger and food noise, persistent intrusive thoughts about food, as well as a diminished ability to feel full with smaller portions. These medications are designed to slow your digestion and increase your feelings of fullness. So when you remove them, digestion speeds back up and hunger signals become stronger, Salomon says. Many people will feel hungry sooner after meals and will think about food more often. But these changes are expected and they're biologically driven. Sustaining progress. If you're anxious about stopping a GLP-1, ask your doctor if tapering off gradually, taking a lower dose, or using the drug intermittently is a better option, if that's financially possible. Here Salomon offers tips for the transition. 1. Eat for fullness. The best way to accomplish this is to focus on these three nutrients. Protein, especially from lean meat, poultry, fish, soy, and dairy products. It's incredibly important, Salomon says, not only because it helps maintain lean body mass, but because the body also burns significantly more calories digesting protein than it does carbohydrates and fats. Fiber is abundant in fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, and whole grains. Salomon notes that boosting your fiber intake is one of the best ways to help mimic the effects of a GLP-1 drug. Fiber, especially the soluble form found in the skins of fruits and vegetables, promotes fullness by creating a gelatin-like consistency in the stomach. That helps to slow down digestion, Salomon says. It also helps push on the sides of the stomach, which signals our brain's natural GLP-1 hormone and makes us feel full. A great way to start is to make sure you have a fruit or vegetable at every meal. Healthy fats found in items such as fatty fish, olive oil, avocados, nuts, and seeds help create a comfortable satiety as well as slow down digestion, helping you feel fuller longer, Salomon says. Her next tip, eat on a consistent schedule. Ideally, eat a meal every 3 to 5 hours. If you find your meals are farther apart, add a high-protein or high-fiber snack, Salomon says. Skipping meals can lead to feelings of chaotic hunger, which can make you eat more than you should, as well as make it more challenging to make healthy decisions. 3. Plan for hunger. Keep shelf-stable snacks in your purse or car. Items such as nuts, edamame, dried fruit, or protein bars provide a healthy option if hunger strikes. Next, move for maintenance. Aerobic activity such as walking, cycling, or swimming burns calories, while strength training helps maintain or increase lean body mass, which is one of the major drivers of our metabolism, Salomon says. Prioritize slumber. Research suggests inadequate sleep can fuel hunger. When we don't get enough sleep, we produce more ghrelin, which is known as the hunger hormone, she says. And lastly, drink sufficient fluids. Dehydration, which is already setting in when we start to feel thirsty, can actually feel like hunger. It can show up as a snacky feeling, so we go look in the cupboard or fridge for something to eat, even though our brain is asking for water, Salomon says. Salomon also advises reframing success. Weaning off a weight loss medication doesn't just require a physical adjustment. Much of the process is mental. Along those lines, it's wise to rethink what success looks like. Instead of hoping to never regain any weight, try to minimize it. It's unrealistic to expect no weight will return, Salomon says. However, with the right structure and nutritional strategies, you can continue to protect your progress as much as possible. Now turning to UNC Health Talk, this next article is about 6 early signs of diabetes. Uncontrolled diabetes puts you at risk for many serious health conditions: heart disease, heart attack, stroke, nerve damage, blindness, kidney failure, and foot or leg amputation, which is why it's so important to work with your healthcare provider to manage high blood sugar. Unfortunately, many people have very few warning signs that they have diabetes. It's really important to see your primary care provider regularly for screening, says UNC health endocrinologist Brooke Mattson, MD, PhD. About 25% of people who have diabetes don't know they have it. The various forms of diabetes, which include type 1 and type 2 and gestational diabetes, are all diagnosed with a blood test. It's important to remember that diabetes can affect anyone, but the risk increases when you have a family history of the disease or have overweight or obesity. If you're experiencing a symptom on the list, make an appointment with your healthcare provider promptly. Don't wait for more symptoms to appear. It's better to get things under control quickly rather than letting it linger, Dr. Mattson says. It will be worse if you put off seeing your doctor than if you get the diagnosis and start treatment. So let's look at those symptoms. One is frequent urination. If you notice a sudden jump in the number of times you're going to the bathroom in a day, talk to your healthcare provider. As blood sugar rises, that excess sugar leaves the body via urine, Dr. Mattson says. The sugar in the urine pulls in extra water from your body, causing you to urinate much more frequently. That increase in urination causes the next symptom, which is excessive thirst. Because you're losing so much of your body's water via urination, you will feel very thirsty. The frequent urination and the excessive thirst go hand in hand, Dr. Mattson says. If you turn to a sugar-sweetened beverage like soda or sweet tea to treat increased thirst, it's going to compound the problem. Reaching for water is a healthier option because it will help you stay hydrated, but it's not the solution to these symptoms. Water cannot bring blood sugar down. It can help bring blood sugar down, but it's not a treatment, and it won't change the diagnosis, Dr. Mattson says. You still need to be evaluated if you have excessive thirst. So it can bring blood sugar down, not a treatment. 3, sudden and intentional weight loss. If your body changes dramatically without a corresponding change in what you're eating, talk to your doctor. Unintentional weight loss is a concerning sign, Dr. Mattson says. The body needs insulin to use sugar for energy. When the body can't make enough insulin or insulin isn't working well, it can't use carbs for energy, so it starts burning fat and muscle, and you lose a lot of weight without trying. The type of quick weight loss is a common sign of type 1 diabetes, though it can also occur with type 2. Type 1 represents a minority of the cases of diabetes, but it's a common misconception that type 1 diabetes is diagnosed exclusively in children, Dr. Mattson says. In fact, the majority of type 1 diabetes is actually diagnosed in adulthood. 4, skin changes. High levels of blood sugar can affect your skin. You might notice spots called acanthosis nigricans. This is a sign of insulin resistance. When there are dark and velvety patches of skin, usually around the neck and armpits, Dr. Mattson says. Other diabetes-related skin changes include dry skin, reddish or reddish-brown spots on your shins, hard or thickening skin, and unexplained small bumps and skin tags. 5th symptom, slow healing wounds and numbness. Uncontrolled diabetes can affect the strength of your immune system, which means that even minor cuts or scrapes can take longer to heal and have a greater chance of becoming infected. Diabetes can eventually impact your blood vessels and nerves in your body. One early warning sign that this damage is taking place is numbness or tingling in your toes, fingers, feet, and hands, or neuropathy. People who have neuropathy in their feet sometimes have wounds they don't even know about because they can't feel it, Dr. Mattson says. Neuropathy is usually associated with longer duration of disease. And the 6th sign, blurry vision. If you notice that your vision goes blurry and then returns to normal, that could be a sign that your body's blood sugar spiked, causing the fluid in your eye to swell. While the symptom may resolve on its own, don't ignore it. People with diabetes are at a higher risk of blindness because of the damage that diabetes can do to the small blood vessels supplying blood to the eye. Typically, it takes years for blindness to occur, and it can be prevented if you keep your diabetes controlled. Once you have a diagnosis, it's important to get annual eye exams to screen for diabetic retinopathy, Dr. Mattson says. It's correlated with how high your blood sugar is, so undiagnosed asymptomatic diabetes can cause a lot of complications at the microvascular level. So here are some steps that may help prevent diabetes. You can't always prevent it, Still, there are steps you can take to minimize long-term complications and keep your blood sugar controlled. 1. See your primary care provider regularly. Not everyone will have symptoms of diabetes, or if they do, it's only after living with the disease for a while. When you see your healthcare provider regularly, they can be sure you're up to date on screenings, and if you do have high blood pressure, they will work with you on a plan for control. 2. Eat a healthy, well-balanced diet. You can lower your blood sugar with a diet that emphasizes fruits and vegetables, lean proteins, and whole grains. Overhauling your diet can seem like an overwhelming task, so Dr. Mattson provides 2 simple ways to get started. Eliminate sugar-sweetened beverages and get in the habit of looking at nutrition labels and ingredient lists at the grocery store, she says. Prioritizing foods with recognizable ingredients or fewer ingredients can help minimize your consumption of ultra-processed foods, which have been shown to have adverse effects on metabolism. And 3, exercise regularly. Aim for 150 minutes of physical activity a week. That doesn't mean you have to start training for a marathon, though. You can move your body in any way you like to move it, Dr. Mattson says. Movement and strength training can lower blood sugar. Regular exercise has also been shown to help you sleep at night, which provides additional benefit. One night of bad sleep can increase insulin resistance, Dr. Mattson says. Getting quality sleep is a really underappreciated part of a healthy lifestyle. If you're concerned about your risk for diabetes, talk to your doctor. Our last article talked about the importance of avoiding sugar-sweetened drinks. And this next article is entitled, Are Artificial Sweeteners Really Worse for Your Brain Than Sugar? An epidemiologist explains. It's from Science Alert, and I like this article because it illustrates some of the problems with observational studies, and especially studies about nutrition. I hope you'll find it interesting and informative. Artificial sweeteners are in the news almost constantly. If you believe the headlines, they are terrible blights on our health that are far worse than the sugar they replace. This isn't always supported by the evidence, but it's something that we love to hear, and so it gets reported on almost weekly, regardless of what the data actually shows. The most recent furor over artificial sweeteners is a perfect example. The headlines have been claiming for months that artificial sweeteners speed up cognitive decline. According to a recent study, there are 6 of these dangerous chemicals, including common ones like xylitol and aspartame, that may be causing our brains to rot more quickly. The study has been covered by hundreds of media outlets. For full disclosure, Science Alert didn't report on that paper specifically, but we do write a lot about recent findings on artificial sweeteners. Despite being published in September 2025, it's still making headlines in the second half of 2026. This is all made especially remarkable given that it doesn't really show any issues from artificial sweeteners at all. The study itself is a very simple piece of observational research. The authors took a cohort of public servants in Brazil called the ELSA dataset. This is a longitudinal study which measured people's brain function over time using a standard battery of tests. At the start of the study, people also filled in very extensive questionnaires about their lives, including what's called a food frequency questionnaire, which measures what people say that they eat. This is important, and we'll get back to it. The authors looked at the correlation between reported sweetener intake, calculated from those food frequency questionnaires, and cognitive decline as measured using 4 different scales. Over the 8 years of the study, they found people in the highest third when it comes to sweetener intake had a modest amount of additional brain aging compared to people in the bottom third. This research suffers from the normal issues that such observational studies do. One big thing is that food frequency questionnaires don't really measure intake of food. They measure what people think they eat. But we know that we are often unreliable historians. Most of these questionnaires ask about the last 12 months of eating, and people rarely remember their food intake for that long with any degree of accuracy. The analysis also assumes that people's food intake didn't change over the course of the study. The authors had a single food frequency questionnaire to rely on, which meant that if people changed their food intakes over this period, there would be no way for them to know about it. As letters to the journal have noted, there are also serious questions about the biological plausibility of the claim. Some of the sweeteners are natural substances. One is actually a very rare form of sugar, and all of them are very different molecules. It would be extremely unlikely for all of these different chemicals to have the same impact on the brain. There's also the problem of reverse causality. That is, people who were already experiencing brain declines due to diseases like diabetes or heart disease may have been more likely to eat and drink artificial sweeteners at the start of the study. This is an issue that's hard to correct, and with the sort of analysis that we see in this paper. It's also worth noting that at least one of the author's analyses did not find any relationship between sweeteners and brain aging. In a series of statistical models that were relegated to the supplementary appendix, they showed that in the full case analysis, there was no relationship between sweeteners and aging. This analysis includes all of the people in the original cohort, whereas the one that was most mentioned excluded people for various reasons, such as having Parkinson's disease or reporting unusually high caloric intake. But the problems don't end there. Independent reviewers have pointed out a series of very clear mathematical mistakes in their paper. Despite a correction, errors remain, including a mistake in the confidence interval level reported in the abstract. This particular research, therefore, proves very little about artificial sweeteners and brain health. At worst, the study shows that there may be some negative impacts, although it depends on which analysis you choose to believe. More likely, the finding that's been everywhere in the media is based on mathematical errors. Despite decades of fear-mongering when it comes to artificial sweeteners, the reality is that they are very well tested and generally not harmful. Some have even suggested that artificially sweetened beverages may be better for your health in some ways than water, although these results are likely caused by people who drink artificially sweetened drinks, choosing to consume fewer high-calorie sugar beverages. Artificial sweeteners get a bad rap, but the data show quite convincingly that they are, at least, better for you than sugar. Next, to turn to Cleveland Clinic Health Essentials. You know, even though school is starting, it's still going to be really hot and sunny out there in our neck of the woods. And so it's important to know that, yes, your sunscreen can expire. While we try not to put an expiration date on all things summer fun, your sunscreen can expire, especially if it's stored incorrectly or sits unused for too long. But does that mean you have to throw away your sunscreen and replace it with a new one? Or can expired sunscreen still be useful? Dermatologist Katherine Anderson Sutton, MD, answers these burning questions. How long does sunscreen last? Like everything else in your medicine cabinet, sunscreen has a shelf life. Its active ingredients naturally break down over time. So unless otherwise noted on the label, sunscreen lasts for about 3 years, but that's only if it's been stored properly. If it's been left in the dredges of a hot car, in a humid environment, or in an area where it's been exposed to sunlight, sunscreen degrades at a much faster rate. Realistically, if you're using sunscreen every day, the way it's directed, each bottle shouldn't last you more than a few weeks or a couple of months, says Dr. Anderson Sutton. What happens if you use expired sunscreen? When sunscreen expires, its active ingredients are no longer effective. That means any UV protection you would have had from a fresh bottle of sunscreen is likely lost. Using expired sunscreen increases your risk of sunburns, sun damage, and skin cancer. To be clear, it's not the sunscreen that causes these negative outcomes. It's the amount of time you spend in the sun without protection. A lot of people think that sunscreen makes them invincible, but if it's old or expired, you're actually susceptible to getting burnt because it's no longer effective, stresses Dr. Anderson Sutton. How to tell if your sunscreen has expired. Expired sunscreen will often have changes in color, consistency, and smell. Mineral and chemical-based sunscreens break down differently. If a mineral-based sunscreen goes bad, you might notice a grittiness or little pebbles in the formula. It's also hard to rub expired mineral sunscreens into your skin. Chemical-based sunscreens tend to go bad more quickly, especially if they've been left in the sun for long periods of time. If a chemical-based sunscreen has been oxidized, meaning it's been exposed to oxygen for too long, it could potentially cause an allergic skin rash that looks like blistering sunburn. When this type of sunscreen expires, it may become yellow, watery, and won't spread well. How to safely store sunscreen. To keep your sunscreen safe and effective for as long as possible, you'll want to store it in a cool, dry place. This keeps its active ingredients from breaking down. Keep it clean. Wash your hands before putting on sunscreen and make sure you close the lid after every use. This helps avoid oxidizing your sunscreen and keeps bacteria from transferring to the bottle, things that could cause it to break down. And lastly, don't keep it in direct sunlight. This quickly breaks down sunscreen. If you're going swimming, don't leave the bottle in the sun. Place it in the shade or cover it with a bag, towel, or blanket. Replace your sunscreen every summer or every month if you're using it as often as you should. Store your sunscreen in a cool, dry area over the winter. And if you're holding on to a bottle of sunscreen that has an unclear expiration date, it's best just to go get another one and start fresh. Well, I'm guilty as charged on that last one. We have run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next week. It'll be our Medical Mystery Week. I hope you've enjoyed this and, more importantly, that you've learned something that will help you, or maybe you've reinforced something you already knew. The content of this program is for people who are blind or print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Again, thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.